Session number 756. Mr. Bevis, reel one.
The son of a chief writer in the Navy. And the family moved to Portsmouth soon after you were born. How old were you when you moved to Portsmouth?
About five, I should think. 1904, I thought it was.
And you grew up here, really, and you went to school not very far away from here at that time.
The ordinary elementary school, George Street to be precise.
And you left there?
I left there when I was 12. And I went to Napier's private school, known as Buckingham Place Academy.
To be coached for the...
First off, for the clerical side of the civil service. Then I didn't take very much to clerical work and decided to go in for the mechanical side in the Navy and took the civil service examination. When I was 15 years of age, and started my career as a naval shipwright apprentice.
To go into the Buckingham Place Academy, as you call it, the Piers Academy, that was quite a normal step for boys of your sort of background.
Yes. Yes, it was a mixed school. But
and it was coaching you for entry into a safe, steady, pensionable job.
Yeah, nearly all pensionable jobs, either civil service or Royal Navy. There was many schools. There was Chivers, there was Napier's, there was Blake's. Oh, there was quite a number of these schools that coached people. Of course, the main thing was really to have got into the secondary school in those days, which I think they call secondary modern or something now, but they only had a limited entry. And, well, I didn't even sit for that, so then my father had to pay.
Father was able to pay, in fact, was he?
Pardon?
Father was able to pay for the private
tuition. Oh, yes, yes. Well, I think in those days it was about 30 shillings a quarter.
And it was Father's idea, really, that you should follow him into a clerical job, white collar job,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
He had been at Greenwich Hospital School.
Yes. And of course, at that time, the highest you could get out of Greenwich School was a writer.
And eventually, of course, he became Lieutenant
Commander.
Following this line for a minute, Father had been quite successful, really.
Yes.
In his own life.
He yes.
had gone from the school as very little, really, as to chief writer and then to a command. To
yes, write. He was one of the first warrant writers. He was made in after Jutland in 1916.
And this made your family, in those days, to sort of middle-class family, would you say?
Yes, I presume you'd more or less say that.
You said the family always lived well and comfortably.
Yes, yes, we were never in want.
Can you just sketch in for me the kind of home life that, and how different it was, say, from a poorer home, the sort of things that you talked about, how your life was... Slightly different, anyway.
Well, for one thing, we were able to purchase our own home, which was only a terraced house. I forget what they went then. About £150, I think, was the average. The average before that, we rented, and that was, I know, 7 and 6 a week in those days. But, I mean, we... We always had good food. I was able to be at this private school.
In what sort of ways would you be different from poorer boys?
Well, we're always able to be clothed well. I mean, in those days, it was kids running about with no boots and stockings on. Back with the Portsmouth Boot Fund, that charitable crowd of business people that used to collect and supply boot. And outside the dockyard gate in those days, when you come out with all these kids wanting the lunch packets that you hadn't eaten your lunch. And quite a lot of us, you know, would take a couple of extra slices to give them as we come out of the gate on the outmasters. The poverty really was pretty bad. That was 1913 and the outbreak of war.
And before that, I mean, a naval writer's family were above most of these sort of people.
Yes, well, the seaman was very... I don't know what a seaman's pay was. Not much over a shilling a day, I don't think. Similar to the army.
They would be among the poorer, yes, in a town like Portsmouth. They wouldn't be able to send their sons to Buckingham Place. Or... And father would have been away when you were a youngster before you left school and went to work. Father was in the Navy, and you grew up in a way when he was not at home so much.
Yes.
Can you remember much about how this affected your life as a youngster?
I certainly had more license.
Mother,
I could get away with doing no homework, but I couldn't when he was home. But of course he commissioned the Iron Duke when she was brand new. That was just prior to the war. Well, then he went to 1916, and by that time, of course, I was well established in the dockyard. But during my school period, he was at Whale Island, so he was home. You see, with the writer branch, they had longer spells home than what they did at sea. But in his younger days, he was away 5 years in one stretch. He got two medals in one, he was at the Boxer Rising in China. And then they moved to the South African War. So he got a medal for each.
Can you remember the atmosphere as he was, when you heard he was coming home, how things changed, how mother, the house began to look forward to him?
Oh, yeah.
In those days?
Yeah, especially the first leave of the war, which I think went on to about 1915 before they, you know, actually got leave. Of course, the Iron Duke led the fleet out. They had a big review here at outbreak of war. And when war was declared, the Iron Duke was the flagship with Jellicoe on board, and he led his fleet to sea, and they never come back again. They went straight on up to Scapa.
And when father was on these long commissions, the one or two that you talked about, soon after you were born, he was away in this 5-year one. Can you remember how you recognised him or how you remember him when he first came home from that?
No, I was too young. You see, well, I must have been born... I remember the troop ships going up to Netley Hospital. I was about 4 then. So probably I was born when he came back from.
And you don't remember too much about, I don't think you said, the way that family life was? And
no, of course, I had another brother and 2 sisters, although they weren't born at that time. I'm the oldest of the family.
And I say, father wanted you to follow in his footsteps into a white-collar job.
That's right.
At any rate, which was, as we said, secure.
Yes.
And this is why you were sent to the academy, along with the sons of other tradespeople, as you said, who were also looking for the same kind of thing, jobs which were, you know, regular.
No.
Father didn't want you in the Navy.
No. He said the pay was low, and of course, as I said, we were only first-class POs, which were the pay of that rating. In fact, he'd done everything to discourage me, really.
Hoping you would stay ashore.
But I still pursued with my idea.
But at first you had been put into the civil service exam. You weren't, as you said, an academic type.
No.
And this meant that Father was wasting his money, really. The headmaster, I believe, sent for him.
Yes, told him that he was wasting his money, because the headmaster there, he only wanted successes. He didn't want any drones. If he thought you weren't going to reflect any credit on him, you were out, because he always had plenty on the waiting list. So, reluctantly, my father said, well, I suppose I must take your advice, and I was transferred over into the class dealing with the...
Your real ambition at this time had come through to be a mechanic, to work with your hands What did Father say when you began to make this clear, and that you wanted a job that, you know, involved you getting dirty and these things? What was his view when he found out you couldn't succeed in the academic business?
Well, I think he just took it to... He listened to the headmaster and realised that either I had come out, and then he... I mean, if I'd have wanted to be an apprentice, he would have had to have paid in those days. If you went to a private firm like Camber and Nicholson, you paid so much for your son to be apprenticed.
So putting you into the dockyard was a way around that?
Yes. Well, it was the goal for everybody to get a free apprenticeship if they possibly could.
Which involved you getting in touch with the Navy. How did he feel about this, that you were now coming into line for maybe going to the Navy, which he didn't approve of anyway? What's his view about that?
Well, you see, I passed the exam, and unfortunately for him, he was in hospital. And so my mother took me down, and we went in, you know, where you choose your trade, in the dockyard, in the office there, and I just said I wanted to be that, and my mother said yes, and there you are, I was in.
There was never any question of boy training?
Boy shipwright.
Yeah, that didn't happen. So the school told you that, you know, preparing you for this exam, the GPO dockyard entry. Tell me about sitting this exam and how you were able to choose, you know, how the marks worked out so that you were able, and some boys could choose higher and some lower.
Well, the Civil Service Commissioner set the exam papers. Once you applied for it, you became a number. And then eventually the day came, and I went to Penny Street down in Old Portsmouth in the big Soldiers Institute. It was all laid out, tables, rows and rows. But I suppose there was probably 150 boys there, all competing for about, 50, 60 vacancies. And not only from Portsmouth, they came from other parts. I mean, even as far as Edinburgh, I mean, they will probably go to Plymouth. These exams were held in all the four ports. But your objective was to get 1,500 marks. That was the grand total. And that comprised of mathematics and geometry and history. There was, I suppose, about six, seven... Well, it took all day in our exams. Well, then those papers went away. They usually held it, I think, in June or July. At any rate, the result came out in August. Well, then, according to what you got, if you got 1499, you had a whole list presented you with all the different trades you could take. Shipwright, fitter, boilermaker, joiner, blacksmith. Well, all those trades that are on there. Plus electrical and all the other branches, they're all in that one exam. Well, then the top fellow, he took his. Then the next one stepped up and went 1498 or 1497, and he chose. And so the list gradually got depleted. And that's how you went down, until eventually there was I think it was 600, either 600 or 700. If you were under that, you needn't go down at all.
You would
say they put a line and everyone went, and then you were. And of course, as I say, the list got depleted. You came down then to sail makers and goodness knows what.
I think.